Okay, we're beginning here four lines down on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing the parallels that were drawn between the Mishnah in Truma versus the Braita that we brought over here. The Gemara rejected those parallels and then said, and an additional reason to reject that parallel is the fact that both of those machlokot in the Mishnah and in the Braita are premised on psukim. So yesterday we discussed the psukim that are the background for the reasons in the Braita by Bechor Baal Mum, the different opinions, that is premised on whether you think there's an Isur to put on a Mum in a Baal Mum. Today, we're going to discuss the background to why there's a Machloket in the Mishnah in Truma, based on the Psukim, and that is Hacha Bikrai Plige. Also, in the Machloket with regards to Truma, it's a Machloket in the Psukim, as to what to do when you have Truma that is a fake Tameh, whether you should protect it, whether you should expose it, or whether you should do nothing. The Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, V'chein Amar Reish Lakish, V'chein Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua, V'ani Hinei Natati Lecha Et Mishmeret Trumotai. So there's a statement with regards to Truma that I have given you Mishmeret Trumotai, the necessity to guard my Truma. So Mishmeret means that you have to take some sort of precaution or protection against something happening. Rabbi Eliezer Sabar, B'shtei Trumota Katu Medaber. It says Trumotai, which is in plural, so it means it's speaking about two different types of Truma. Achat Truma Tehora, V'achat Truma Tvuya. Whether it's Truma that is completely Tehor, or Truma that we have a Safek about. V'amar Chorano, and the Torah says about that Truma, Avid Leshimur. You need to guard it. You need to protect it. So that's the basis of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. That not only by Truma Tahura, you have to protect it from becoming Tameh, also by Truma that is a Safek Tameh, you also have to take precautions and protect it. V'Rav Yeshua, Trumati Ktiv. Even though it's pronounced Trumotai, but had you had no Nikudot over there and you just read it the way that it's spelled in the Pasuk, you would have read it as Trumati, which is my Truma, or a singular Truma, which means that you only have to take care of Truma Tahura. You don't have to take care of Truma that is Tvuya. And that's why Rabbi Yeshua says you can expose it. You can put it in a position by which it will become Tameh, Grama, even though you can't actively do it, but at least through Grama you can do it. And that would explain their Machloket. The Baalei Tosafot just point out that the Gemara in Bamei Madlikim also has a third Truma, which is Truma Tmeah, that also has limitations associated with. And the Gemara there also darshins the same Pasuk. So he wants to know how you get three different Trumot out of the word Trumotai, if that only means two. So Tosafot says that, it says there, Natati Lecha Mishmeret Trumotai, that Trumotai has two different statements before, Natati Lecha and Mishmeret. So one of them is that I've given it to you to use in a particular way. That's a reference to Trumat Me'ah, that you're allowed to burn the Shemen Truma. You're allowed to dispose of the Trumat Me'ah in a way that you get Hana from it. And then the other one is the Mishmeret, the fact that you have to protect it against becoming Tameh, and that is true by Truma Tehora, and also by Truma Hatzuya, at least according to Rabbi Eliezer, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it only has one application, which is by Truma Tehora, the Memra. So from this, you would conclude that Rabbi Eliezer Savar Yesh Eim Lemikra, that Rabbi Eliezer focuses on the way the word is pronounced in the Torah, not the way that it's spelled, because he darshins the word Trumotai based on the pronunciation of it, not like Rabbi Yeshua focuses on the way that it's spelled, which would give you Trumati, Bimini. And we have a question with regards to that, because we seem to have their opinions be different in another location, which is, we seem to have Rabbi Lezer's opinion be different in the Kidumar and Kiddushin, which is Bibig Doba. This is a reference to an Amaha Ivriya, which is found at the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim, where an individual has auspices over his daughter that is a Ktana, and he has the right to sell her as an Amah Ivriya. If he sells his daughter as an Amah Ivriya, she doesn't go out like the Avadim. If their master, meaning the new master who the father has sold her to, is not pleased with her, and therefore he does not marry her, Yehud is using the monies of the purchase of this Amah Ivriya to be designated as Kesef Kiddushim, therefore he doesn't marry her, Vehefta, and she doesn't redeem herself, La'amnachri lo imshol la'machra. He may not sell her to an amnachri or to another party, Bevigdoba, because of that rejection. Now, it's not clear here what the Bevigdoba means, and what context it's referencing to, and that's going to be the discussion right now. The other options are, Im livnoi adena, he can give it to his son to marry. He can give her to his son to marry. Mishpata banot yasela, then she gets all the entitlements that any other normal woman would get in a marriage like this. Im acheret yikachlo, if he marries her and takes another wife, sheirak suta banotalo igra, she's entitled to, again, all the entitlements of a woman that is married. Im slashelo yasela, yetzachina main kasif. He doesn't do any one of these three, then she goes free at the end of her term when she becomes of age. Ein kasef, there's no money that is owed to the owner of this woman. Now, the discussion in the Gemara Kedushin is, the father who has auspices over this daughter, when does he lose that right? He sold her to another party as an ama ivriya. Does that mere fact that he sold her to another party then remove his rights to sell her again or to have auspices over her? Or is it only if the owner marries her that he loses that right? And that has a nafkamina with regards to if the woman either is divorced or is somehow freed from this master. In those cases, does the father have the ability to sell her again as an ama ivriya while she's still a ketana? So there's a machloket there between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. One of them says that a person is not allowed to sell off his daughter the shifchut as an ama ivriya acharishut, after she's been married. The other one believes that ein adam mocheret bito l'shifchut achar shifchut, which means that he can't sell her as an ama ivriya after he's already sold her as an ama ivriya. It's what is otherwise known in the Gemara as a yitoma b'chayei avia. She's an orphan in the life of her father. She's not orphaned because her parents are alive, but she's orphaned from the sense that she has no capacity to marry herself off because she's a ketana. She's autonomous because her father has no rights over her any longer, but her autonomy doesn't do anything because she's a ketana. And therefore she becomes what's called a yitoma b'chayei avia, but she has no ability to marry herself off, to do anything in terms of the right, the level interactions, because of the fact that her father no longer has any rights. That's just like a yitoma, a regular orphan who doesn't have a father. She has nobody to marry off until she comes of age where she can marry herself off. The Rabbanan instituted the ability of the mother or the brother to marry her off, midrabbanan, but that's not an institution, midoraita. So that's the discussion in the Gemara in Kiddushin. The reason I'm giving so much background is because there's huge machloket here between Rashi and the Baalei Tosafot as to what the girsa is in the Gemara in Kiddushin, as well as in our Gemara over here. And then that influences how you read the remainder of the Gemara. The girsa that we have in our Gemara now is according to Rashi's girsa, which is Remini. Bibig doba. Kevin shipiresh talito aleha. Once he puts his cloak on her, shuvein rashai lemochra divi Rabbi Akiva, no longer able to sell her off. That's the view of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer mer, Kevin shuk bagad ba shuveni rashai the mochra. Soon as he has rejected her, then he has no right to sell her anymore. So Rabbi Akiva clearly believes that the item that takes away the auspices of the father is the beged, which means that when the master, the adon, marries her and puts his cloak around her, which is a symbol of marriage bringing one into the household of the man. That's why the practice of Sfaradim is to take a talit at the wedding under the chuppah and put it over the head of the chatan and the kala, because that's an indication of the husband taking the wife into his auspices. And so it's over here. The word that we're going to read is bibig doba. And the big do over there is like the word beged. And therefore we're going to understand the word bibig do to mean bibig doba. When the adon puts his beged on her, then lo imshol mochra, the father no longer has a right to sell his daughter anymore. So that means that there's ein shifchut acharishut. Once she's married, then the father no longer has auspices to sell her as a shifcha afterwards. If this husband, the current husband, divorces her, and then she is returned to her father's house, the father no longer has auspices over her because of this bibig doba, because the word big do is pronounced bibig do, which would be like beged. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva is following aim lemikra, the way that it's pronounced. And that's why he speaks about a beged. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer looks at the way that it's spelled. And had it been wanted to spell it in a way that would have indicated bibig do, it should have had a yud in there. The fact that it doesn't have a yud in there makes it like the word bagdo, which is with a kamatz katan. And you can see that in Rashi, he brings an example from Parshat Nitzavim. Kamo bishamo et divrei ha'ala hazot. So over there, the word shama is changed to shamo. So to over here, the word bagad would be changed to the word bagdo. So instead of being a noun, it's a verb. And that verb says bagad, that he rejected her. He pushed her away. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is of a view that once the father has rejected her, in a sense, because he sold her off to a different adon, then he loses his auspices over her and he has no right to marry her off again. And that's the view of Rabbi Eliezer, that ein adam mocheret bito l'shivchut achar shivchut. Rabbi Akiva and the Gemara in Kiddushin holds of yesh eim lemikra, the way that it's read, which is bibigdo. And Rabbi Eliezer is saying yesh eim lemisoret, the way that it's spelled determines the meaning of the word. So that's a stira to what we have over here. Because here he's saying eim lemikra, trumotai, the way that you read it is governing. Yet in Kiddushin he's saying the way that it's spelled governs. And therefore that creates a problem here in our explanation of Trumotai. Rashi changed the girsa of the Gemara here. It's clear that there was a different girsa in the Gemara, and Rashi says, V'yesh mishabshim ha-shmua b'masechet kedushim. There's some people who mix up that which is brought in the Gemara Kedushin b'gorsim, and they have it just the opposite. The Rabbi Lezer says, V'yesh eim lemikra. The Rabbi Lezer has eim lemikra, and Rabbi Akiva holds of eim lemisoret. And Rashi says, it just doesn't work then, because then what's the question of the Gemara over here? If you hold Yesh Eim Le Mikra in the Gemara in Kiddushin, that's what Rabbi Eliezer says over here, Yesh Eim Le Mikra. Then you don't have a Stira. What's the Gemara bringing a Stira? For that reason, Rashi favored heavily this Girsa that we just read in the Gemara, but in doing so, he undermined the older Girsa Ot, which is what the Balei HaTosafot point out. He says, Rav Sfarim Yashanim, in the older Sfarim, Girsa Ipcho Kan. The girsa is flipped over here. Ubi kiddushin, and in the Gemara kiddushin, va'od, the girsa da kuntris, there's a big problem, because makdim divi Rabbi Akiva, the divi Rabbi Eliezer, shaya robo. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkonos was one of the rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. So if that's the case, the braita should have been brought in the order of the Rabbi, then the Talmud. So Rabbi Eliezer's opinion should have been first, and then Rabbi Akiva's opinion. The way we have it now in our Gemara, Rabbi Akiva's opinion is brought first, and Rabbi Eliezer's position is brought second. There are other things that the Balei Tosafot point out as to problems with the girsa of Rashi. But Rashi has a serious issue, which is that if you don't have it the way that he puts it out here, you don't have a stira to the Gemara over here from the Gemara in Kiddushin. And if you see in the Rabbeinu Gershom has a girsa that matches what was the original girsa oath of the Gemara. And then he's trying to deal with the fact that the girsa here seems to be at odds with the girsa in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is an indication that there was a problem here. There was some mixing, or there was a difference in opinion with regards to the girsot. So later on in the Tosafot, Tosafot says, V'nira l'beinu tam, digar sinan. The right girsot in our Gemara over here is the following. Kevin shepirish talito alav, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Over here, the one who says that it's determined by the talit is Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva Omer, kevin shebagad ba, once he rejected it. Now if you look at our Gemara over here, the Gemara never says whether it's eim l'misoret or eim l'mikra. It just assigns the opinion to one of the two Tanaim. So Rashi interpreted that to mean something. So Rashi's interpretation was that Rabbi Akiva held of the Beged, and Rabbi Lezer held of the Bagad. And then Rashi explained that. Rabbi Akiva's following Eim LaMikra, and Rabbi Lezer's following Eim LaMisoret. And what Rabbi Notam says, you can still have that be true, even if you reverse the Girsa. And that is that the way that he has the Girsa is that Talit is assigned to her Beged, is related to Rabbi Eliezer. He's the Rebbe. He goes first. So he's the first statement in the Braita. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kevin Shebagad Ba, he's the one who says that it's about rejection. And that is, the E Lashon Beged Vitalit, Havilei the Mikre Bebegdo Bitzere. It should have had either a Tzere or a Sego under it, because if you really meant Beged, then the word shouldn't say Bebigdo, it should say Bebegdo or Begdo. The Mikra, the way that you read it is big dough. That's what influences Rabbi Akiva to say that it's talking about bagat, a rejection and not a beged. Wait a minute. We have evidence of the fact that the word big dough means beged by Yosef. When it says by Ishet Potifar, betit peseu bebig dough, she grabbed his beged. Shani hocha, the ika lemite. Over there, there's no question that it's talking about a beged. It's not talking about a bagat, that it was a rejection of some sort. But over here, where you could have made a mistake, it should have been more clear, the pasuk. The fact that it didn't do such, and it says, bibigdo, which is eim lemikra, the way that you read it, Rabbi Akiva says, it's clearly talking about bagat, and not beged. But if you read the word without any nikudot on it, the way that it's spelled, if you just have the word without the pronunciation of the way that you read it, you would more likely to say that it's a beged than a bagad over here, because it writes the word beged without a yud in it. And that's how Rabbeinu Tam explains the problem over here. So Rabbeinu Tam flips their positions in the Braita, which is, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the real girso that was there before Rashi changed it. And he solves the problem of Aim the Mikra and Mesoret by explaining the Mikra and the Mesoret differently. According to Rashi, the Aim the Mikra is big dough. The way that you say big dough would have been a Lashona Beged. And that's why he explains it that way. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam says the Lashona big dough is a Lashona Bigida. Because if it was Beged, it would say Begdo or Begdo. And so since it doesn't say that, therefore the big dough must mean to reject rather than to wear. So that's how Rabbeinu Tam solves the problem. Just to complicate things further, there is a third view that is brought by the Tosafot in the Gemara Kiddushin, that the machloket has nothing to do with the word beged, but rather with the word lo in the pasuk. It says, imra'a b'nei aduna, asher lo ye'ada. Over there, it's spelled lamed aleph, lo as if no, but it's pronounced lamed vav, lo ye'ada, which means that he took her as a wife. And therefore, that would actually explain the remainder of the pasuk, which is, imra'a b'nei aduna, asher. The question is, do you follow the way that we pronounce it, which is lo ye'ada, which means he took her as a wife? Then, so that would then indicate that if the Adon took her as a wife, then the father no longer has rights over her. That's because it was lamed vav, the way that you pronounce it, aim lemikra. On the other hand, if you read it as lamed aleph, which is the mesoret, as to how to spell it, then it would be the case where the Adon didn't marry her. But nevertheless, the father no longer has auspices over her because he sold her to this Adon. And then that would be the fact that bagat, that he rejected her, that's what makes it that he doesn't have rights over her any longer. That would be the same girsa as Rashi over here in terms of their opinions, because then Rabbi Akiva would say that it has to do with the talit, and the talit is because the lamed vav, that is the mikra, that's there the way you read it, and then Rabbi Eliezer would say that it is the way that it is written, not the way that it's pronounced, it's lamed aleph, lo, and that would mean that it's once he sells her, that's when he loses his rights. So in the girsa of Rashi, you could have this machloka be not revolving around the word beged itself, but rather around the word lo, which actually has a mikra and misoret in that pasuk. So those are three different ways to explain the machloket here between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva. In the end, the question is that we're saying that Rabbi Eliezer holds in the mikra, the way it pronounces, governs, yet in the Gemara and Kiddushin, it's saying that it's not by way you pronounce it, but rather by the misoret, the way that it is spelled in the pasuk. According to Rashi, that means that it says, bagdo, that there was a rejection, and that's how Rabbi Eliezer comes to his opinion that if the father sold her, he's no longer able to sell her again. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it is aim le misoret, which is that the way that it's spelled, you're more likely to think it means beged than bagad, and that's why if the Adon marries her, the father no longer has auspices over her. According to the way that we just said here, the Tosafot in Kiddushin, asher lo ye'ada, which is the way that it's spelled in the pasuk, which is lo, that it means not marrying her. Nevertheless, the father loses rights to her, which is why Rabbi Eliezer says here, once bagad, he has no right to then sell her again. In all those instances, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion it's aim lemisoret. The way it's spelled in the pasuk governs, and therefore it would be in contradiction to what he's saying here about trumotai, that we follow the way that it's pronounced rather than the way that it's spelled. So Gemara says, elahacha b'hakamiflege. Therefore, you can't give that as the explanation over here, but rather, this is the machloket. Rabbi Yeshua Savar, Haru Lecha Shmor. Shein Ru Lecha Lo Tishmor. That which you can utilize, you have to guard. You have to protect against becoming Tameh. That which you can't utilize, you don't have any obligation to watch it. Rabbi Eliezer Hanami Ru'uyahi. Rabbi Eliezer says, when you have Safek Truma that has a Safek Tuma to it, it's also Ru'uyah for you, and you have to guard it or protect it against it becoming Tameh. Shema Yavoi Lehu V'Yitarenu. Because there's a possibility that Eliyahu will show up and tell you that it was Tahor. And if it was Tahor, you could have utilized it. Therefore, you have an obligation of Shimur. Rabbi Yoshua is going to say, Eliyahu is not here yet. So since he's not here yet, you have no ability to utilize it. Since you have no ability to utilize it, there's no obligation to be Shomeret. And that's their machloket. The Gemara now moves back to discussing the Mishnah and the Braita as to whether when you have an animal with a blood clot in it or a problem with blood that needs to be let, and that letting the blood could cause a mum, What's the halacha? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha ki Rabbi Shimon. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that you're allowed to bloodlet the animal, even if it causes a mum. Matki v'la Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, hey Rabbi Shimon. Which Rabbi Shimon are you referring to? Ilay Rabbi Shimon d'matnitin. If you're referring to Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah Rabbi Shimon says that you're allowed to make a mum, to let the blood out, but you're not necessarily allowed then to shech the animal on that mum. Ad hashto lo shminon Shmuel davar sheinu mitkaven mutar. Shmuel didn't tell us until this point in time that something that is unintentional, it is mutar according to Rabbi Shimon. That's a machloket in the Gemara in Beitza, the Gemara in Shabbat, as to whether davar sheinu mitkaven is mutar, which is the view of Rabbi Shimon, or whether davar sheinu mitkaven is asur, which is the view of Rabbi Yehuda. V'ha Rabbi Chia barashi amar Rav halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rav paskins like Rabbi Yehuda that davar sheinu mitkaven is asur. Rav Chanan bar Ashi Amar Shmuel halacha Rabbi Shimon. Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Shimon that davar sheinu mitkaven is mutar. Rav Chia ba'avin matni belob gabre. He brought the Misora down without any other Amoraim saying it, but rather Rav and Shmuel saying it themselves. Rav Amar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Shmuel Amar halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. The Rav says the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda, davar sheinu mitkaven is asur. Whereas Shmuel holds that the halacha like Rabbi Shimon, davar sheinu mitkaven is mutar. So if that's what you're getting from the Mishnah, by passing like the Mishnah, you say that Rabbi Shimon believes davar sheinu mitkaven is mutar, then that information is known already. Why do you need Shmuel to tell you that again? Ela Rabbi Shimon the Braita. Must be that the reference is to Rabbi Shimon in the Braita, where he says not only are you allowed to make a mum in it, but you can also shech the animal on that mum. Rabbi Shisha, Brei de Ravidi, Matni Lo Behedyo. Shizbredi says it explicitly. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha ke Rabbi Shimon de Braita. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in the Braita, meaning that not only are you allowed to make a mum in it in order to bloodlet to save the animal, but you also can shech the animal on that mum. So now there is a major problem with this Gemara, and the Balei HaTosafot already start to acknowledge that, which is, where do you have davar sheinu mitkaven over here? Where is the unintentional part of it over here? You look in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says, Yakis, afo pisho sebo mum. You're allowed to bloodlet, even though you make a mum in the animal. Sounds like there that you can make a mum in the animal in order to bloodlet. Who says there was unintentional making of a mum? Sounds like from Rabbi Shimon, even if you did it intentionally, you could have that mum. And similarly in the Braita, when it brings the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, it sounds like over there, Rabbi Shimon Omer, af nishchata lo to mum. Not only can you make a mum, you can shecht on that mum. Again, it sounds like it's intentional in nature. So where is the davar sheino mitkaven over here? So the Balei HaTosafot quote Rashi from back on Daf Kafei Amud Aleph, where they disagreed with Rashi there as well. But Rashi over there explained with regards to the shtei sarot of the Parah Adumah. When you had the two red hairs of the Parah Adumah that were partially black at the ends of the hair. And over there we said you could cut it off. And the Gemara says, well, why can you cut it off? And the Gemara says, no, it's a davar sheino mitkaven. It's an unintentional item. What do you mean it's unintentional? When you cut the hairs, you're intentionally cutting the hair. Rashi said over there, the chashiv eino mitkaven, it's considered unintentional when you cut the two hairs off of the parah duma, mishum de'ein mitkaven legiza, because you're not intending to shear the animal, elo takenet parah, but to fix the animal. You're trying to make it into a parah duma, that's ksheira. You're not trying to shear the animal. So you're not in violation of shearing. You're only doing it to be machshir the animal. Since your intent is not for shearing, it's called davar sheinu mitkaven. Tosvot says, what type of davar sheinu mitkaven is that? Davar sheinu mitkaven is where you unintentionally end up doing something, not when you actually do the action, and then you tell me, I didn't mean for this outcome, I only meant for this outcome. That's not called a davar sheinu mitkaven. Rashi over there made that distinction and said, if you intended for one outcome, then it's called davar sheinu mitkaven with regards to the other outcome. And so Tosafot says, if you subscribe to that view of Rashi back on Kafei, you can say the same thing here. Over here, when you bloodlet the animal, you weren't intending to put a mum in the animal. You were trying to cure the animal. You were trying to medically make sure that this animal can survive. So since your intention was to save the animal or to heal the animal, you didn't have intention for making a mum. And that's why it's called davar sheinu mitkaven. So Tosafot says, Rashi, the Shitato, makes sense over here, because he's saying, even with the same action, if you have different intentions than what the problem is, that's called davar sheinu mitkaven. You can see that in Rashi here over as well. Kevin shaloi adeato latil bo mum, kidei latiro. Since his intention here was not to put a mum in order to make it mutar to eat, elo kidei shaloi yamut, but rather to heal it or make sure that it doesn't die, lo kansin in late. We don't penalize him for that. So Rashi, again, the Shitato back on Chavhei, says the same thing over here, which is that, yes, you're making a mum, and you're intentionally making a mum, but your intent in making the mum is to cure the animal. Since that's your intent, we don't look at your making the mum as a problem for being matir the bechor, because you didn't intend to be matir the bechor through that mum. And that's why it's called darashenu mitkavein, with regards to the mum that you make in there. Tosafot, like on Chavei, doesn't like that explanation of the darashenu mitkavein, and therefore Tosafot does something that I hinted to yesterday, which is he says that the Mishnah and the Braita are actually speaking about two different cases. And that's why the opinions in the Braita and the opinions in the Mishnah are not aligned. That's because they're talking about a different situation. The situation of the Braita, as the Gemara said yesterday, is a case where the animal will die if you don't bloodlet. So your only choice is to bloodlet the animal in order that it doesn't die. In that case, the dispensations that are given in that Braita and the opinions of the Tanaim revolve around the question as to whether you can put a mum into a baal mum. The animal is now a baal mum, a full-fledged baal mum, because it's going to die from this blood problem. If that's the case, it's clearly a mum and a serious mum. So now, can you make another mum in an animal that's already a baal mum? That's what we discussed at the end of yesterday, the machloket in the psukim, as to what is the opinion of each of the Tanaim with regards to that. Rabbi Meir says, you can't put a mum into a baal mum. The Chachamim say, you can put a mum into a baal mum. So over there, the question was not a question about davar shenu mitkavein. It was a question as to whether you're allowed to put a mum into a baal mum. That's very different than what's going on in our Mishnah. In the case of our Mishnah, it is not clear that the animal is going to die from the blood clot. It's going to be problematic, at least temporarily. It has a solution, which is you could bloodlet it. So it's something that is problematic. It's what's otherwise known as a mum over. It's a temporary mum. And when you get a temporary mum, nobody thinks that you can put a mum into an animal with a mum over. And so therefore the question in our Mishnah is a different question. It's not a question as to whether you're permitted to put such a mum into an animal or not. Because in the Braita, you can even do it intentionally and put the mum in there, because it's all about the halachic question if you can put a mum into something that's already a baal mum. Whereas in the Mishnah, the question is, can I make a cut in the animal that might result in a permanent mum? And so Tosafot makes that clear, that the case in the Mishnah is a case where you are putting in a mum that will not be a permanent mum. But there is a chance, and only a chance, that maybe that will lead to a permanent mum. If for certain it would be a permanent mum, that's a psikreshe. And even Rabbi Shimon, who says, davar shenu mitkavein is mutar, by a psikreshe, says it's asur. So it can't be that you're for sure going to make it into a mum kavua. It also can't be that you're intending for a mum kavua. The machloket here is, what happens if you put in a temporary mum, a mum over, that might result in a mum kavua? So there is the shita of Rabbi Shimon. We don't worry about that because it's a davar she'enu mitkavein. The mum kavua was an unintentional outcome of your bloodletting the animal. When you went to bloodlet the animal, you were bloodletting in such a manner by which you thought it would only be a mum over. There's a chance that it could turn into a mum kavua, but that's not your intent. If that happens, that's davar shenu mitkavein, and that's mutar. So therefore, here, that's the Gemara's question. If you say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, the reason behind Rabbi Shimon's position in the Mishnah is that it's davar shenu mitkavein. It's an unintentional outcome. Now, that's why in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon does not say you can shech the animal on that mum kavua. That's because it was only a mum over that was in the animal. And if it ends up being a mum kavua, it's a davar she'enu mitkavein. It was your unintentional outcome of what you were trying to do. But otherwise, the mum that you're making there is really a mum over. And if it's a mum over, then you can't shech the animal. And that's why Rabbi Shimon the Mishnah just says you're permitted to bloodlet the animal, but doesn't say anything about the permissibility of shechting the animal on that mum, because that mum is not going to be a permanent mum. That's accidental if it happens that way. That's not your intention. Whereas in the Braita, we're talking about a case where you're intentionally making a mum in it and intentionally making a full-fledged mum there. The reason it's allowed over there is not because it's davar shenu mitkavein. You're mitkavein for it. You intend for it. But it's got a mum in it already. The mum is the fact that this animal's going to die from the blood clot that's there. And given that you have a mum kavua in there that you could check the animal on, and the only way to save it is to put another mum in there, the question is not about davar shenu mitkavein. The question is whether you're allowed to put a mum into a baal mum. And according to the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, who say that you're allowed to put a mum into a baal mum, there we have a dispensation to put the mum kavu in it. The only machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim is, once you do that mum, which was permitted to do such, you can you then shech the animal on that mum? The Chachamim say that you may not, whereas Rabbi Shimon says you can't. We don't worry about the fact that he's going to intentionally make it a mum where he didn't need to in order to shech the animal. That is the difference between the Mishnah and the Braita. That's the flow of the Gemara now. The Gemara says, why does Shmuel need to tell us is mutar, which is the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah? That is something that we know already. The Gemara says, no, we're talking about Rabbi Shimon and the Braita. Rabbi Shimon and the Braita is a totally different halacha. It has nothing to do with Dovrishen Mitkaven, because it's whether you can put a mum into a bar mum. And number two is whether we're kones, whether we then disallow this individual to use that mum kavua in order to shech the animal. And that's what the Gemara says here, that the halacha is Rabbi Shimon Babraita. And that way, Tosafot avoids all the problems of, isn't it mitkavein over here? Isn't it a psikreshe? He does that by bifurcating the cases and saying the case in the Mishnah is a case where the animal will not die from the blood problem, whereas the Braita is talking about a case where the animal will die from the blood problem. All right, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Atzareim ozen babechor. Someone who makes a mum in the ear of a bechor. Again, when you make mumim in areas where there's cartilage, those are mumim that will remain. They generally will not heal, and they generally will be a mum kavua that will allow you to shech the animal based on that mum. So over here, Rashi claims it's a kohen that's doing this, that the kohen does this in order to make it that he can eat the bechor. So he puts a mum into its ear intentionally. You could be speaking about a case where it's Israel. Now generally for the Israel, it doesn't matter, so he's not going to do this, but it could be a case of safek bechor, where the Israel is allowed to keep it by safek bechor, and he has to wait for a mum. So it could be Israel that's making the mum here. In either case, he does it intentionally, and the halacha is, harizelo ishkot olamit divir Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, you may not shech this animal forever. It's a penalty now. You try to be matir the animal, you lose the rights to this animal completely. You will not be able to be matir it at all, even if it gets a different mum in it. From the Gemara, it sounds like that this is a knas. This is a penalty that's imposed on the individual because he tried to circumvent the halacha. So then we penalize him that he won't be able to get around the halacha and he'll be stuck with this permanently. The Tosafot brings a possibility from the Sifrei that Rabbi Eliezer believes that this is a din midoraita. Now Tosafot tries to show that he doesn't think that's correct, but he does bring that view that there is a possibility that Rabbi Eliezer thinks this is a din doraita. Chumim ormim, nolad bo mum acher ishchot alav. The Chumim say that, yes, this mum that he made intentionally, he can't shech the animal on. But another mum that comes about, then that's okay, because if that happened by itself, then another mum will permit the animal. So the penalty is only on this mum particular, not on the animal as a whole. Rabbi Eliezer thinks that the penalty is on the animal as a whole. Umi kanis Rabbi Eliezer le'olam. Is that really true that Rabbi Eliezer, when he finds you doing something that's illegal or improper, that he penalizes you and says you can't use it at all? Birimini, mishai telo baheret. Someone who had a nega tzorat, vinik tzitza. And it fell off, came off, unintentionally, not by active engagement with it. It fell off. Then he's tahor, because there's no longer a negatzarat there. And so you can't be tameh. On the other hand, katzitza b'mitkavein. If you intentionally pulled it off, in order to be mitaher yourself, when you get another nega, and then that nega becomes tahor, you'll be tahor from the first one. Until the nega spreads to the entirety of his body, or until the baharit reaches below the threshold size of what would be a problem of a nega. So now let's dissect each of the opinions. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if you intentionally pull the baharit off of your body, midoraita, you are tahor, because there's no nega there. Without a nega, you can't be tameh. So then when you pull it off intentionally, Rabbi Eliezer says, that nega you're stuck with. You're now tamei, and you can't be mitairi yourself, because that nega is no longer there. Midoraita, yes, you're tahor, because there's no nega. On the other hand, midorabanan, they penalized you and said that you are tamei. Now, how do you become tamor if the nega's not there? If the nega's not there, there's no way to become tahor anymore. The answer to that is, kishivelo nega acher. When you have another nega tzarat, and you become tahor from that second one, that'll also include the first one with it. The reason is because nega'im are not a natural phenomenon. They are a supernatural phenomenon, which God is penalizing in some way the individual. So if the person needed to be penalized, then the second nega wouldn't have become tahor. So once you have another nega, and that nega becomes tahor, then by definition we would assume that the first one was also tahor, or would have become tahor at this point, because Hashem is clearly saying that this person is cured from their metaphysical problem. And so therefore, once you have another nega and become tohor, then you're tohor legamri. The Rabbanon, on the other hand, say that the new nega has no influence on the first nega. Maybe you're tohor from the second nega, but the first nega would have still been tameh. There's no correlation between them. So the only way to overcome the problem is either you have a nega that spreads the whole body, which we know from Parshat Tazriah, that a nega that spreads over the entirety of the body individual is tahor. Because in that case, mimonav shach, even if the other nega was tamei, it would have been captured by the nega spreading to the entirety of the body, and it would have been tahor as well. And since that's the case, now you have captured the other nega. Or the other possibility is it's less than a kugris. Now less than a kugris is a problem because the guy pulled it off of his arm. Of course it's less than a kugris now because it's no longer there. So then what does that mean that it's less than a kugris? It's less than the size of a bean, which is the threshold size to be tamei tumat tzorat. So Rashi over here explains the case as being kodem shekatzitza. Before he pulled it off, it was less than a kugris, then he's tahor. The reason he's tahor is because it was never tamei. It was never big enough to make him tamei. So when he pulls it off, there's no penalty there. Aval ibishat shekatzitza, hava be shiur, nega, but if at the time he pulled it off, there was enough size to be a nega, ain lo tara alumit. Then there's no tara alumit. Kansin le lo olam. That's the view of the chachamim. The Baal Tosafot bring Rashi's explanation, and then they bring an additional explanation, which is what you did was you have a nega, and the nega has the requisite size to possibly be tameh. Then you pulled half of it off. So now that which remains is less than a kugris. That which you took off was also less than a kugris. So now you took off a piece, half a gris, and you left on your arm half a gris. So you can't become tamei from that which is on your arm. If that which on your arm heals, then my nimonov shach, you are tahor. That's because even if the original piece that you pulled off was still there, you wouldn't be tamei because that piece was only half a gris and it doesn't have the requisite size. And the part that would have made up the requisite size is still on your body, that became tahor. That's why when it drops below the threshold of a gris, meaning that when you pulled it off, it was less than a gris in your what you pulled off and what was left behind was less than a gris. If the part that you left behind is cured, then you're going to be enough shach tahor, because even if you had left the piece on, you'd still be tahor now, because the piece that you took off is not a requisite size. And therefore, even if you had left it, you wouldn't be tamei at this point. That's the way the Baal Tosafot explained it. So now the Gemara says, how can you deal with this? You have Rabbi Eliezer over here only penalizing the individual with regards to the nega that he pulled off, not making it a permanent penalty. And here by the Bechor, he makes it a permanent penalty. My answer is Rabbi Rav Yosef Darmei Tavayu Ki Kanis Rabbi Lezer B'Memono. When Rabbi Lezer penalizes, that's with monetary matters. Bigufo Lo Kanis. By his body, they're not kunes. And the Gemara explains that. B'Memono Igala Meimar, by his possessions, the Ati Lemeivad. He's going to do this intentionally. We want to prevent him from doing this. If we don't penalize him, then he has no downside, which is that he'll put him more intentionally in the Bechor. What's his downside? Maybe we'll believe him and be Matir the Bechor. That's upside for him. Maybe we don't believe him. He's no worse off than he was before. At this point in time, so he has no mum in the animal. He had to wait for another mum anyway. So then what's his downside in putting the mum here and saying, oh, wait for another mum? That's what he was doing anyway. So there's no downside. So in order to dissuade him from doing such a thing, we have to make it that there's downside to putting an intentional mum in there. And that's what Rabbi Lazar does. He says that if you put a mum in there, it's never going to be okay. That's downside. Now, yeah, you might be believed when you put the mum in there and you'll get away with it. But if you don't get away with it and we catch you, you're going to lose this animal completely. And that's the penalty in order to stop him from upfront doing such a thing. Kufo, mi'ika ne'meimar da'ati le'meivad. On the other hand, by your body, there's no guarantee that you're going to get what you need in order to be tahor. By the case of the body, when you rip off the nega, we still have to wait for another nega in order for you to be tahor. There's no guarantee that you're going to get another nega. Who says that you're going to get another nega? That's a risk. If you leave the nega on your body, there's a chance you'll become tohor. You rip the nega off, and we say now, you're not tohor until you get another nega. Who knows if you're ever going to get another nega? That gives you downside right away. And since there's downside, that's a disincentive immediately not to do such a thing. So all Rabbi Eliezer is trying to do is create a disincentive. By the case of Bechor, the only way to create a disincentive is to say that it's asur alomit. By the body of the individual, by the tzarat, you can have that disincentive as soon as you say that the nega that you took off is now permanently tamei until you get another nega. That's enough of a disincentive, and that's why Rabbi Lezer has a difference in opinion. So I'm a Rova. To Rabbi Lezer, to Rabbi Lezer kasho. You're telling me that there's a steer in Rabbi Lezer. To Rabbanon, to Rabbanon, lo kasho? Why isn't there a steer in the Rabbanon? Rabbanan and our Mishnah say that you only penalize the mum itself and say you have to wait for another mum. By Tzara'at, they make you permanently tamei. Ela Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer lo kasha. It's not a student, Rabbi Eliezer, kidushanina. We just explained the difference between mamon and gufo. Rabbanan and the Rabbanan, nami lo kasha. By the Rabbanan, it's also not a question. Hacha b'may da avad kansua. Hacha b'may da avad kansua. In each of the cases, that which he did, they penalized. B'may ikavein. In the case of the Bechor, what was the intention? The Mishre b'hai mumah. To make the Bechor mutar through that mum. U'b'hai mumah kansua Rabbanan. And therefore the Rabbanan were konisim and say that you're not successful. If you put a mum in it to be matirit, the b'hai mumah lo l'shtarile. That mum will never make it mutar. V'halcha, by the case of Tzara'at, b'may the Ovid kansua. That which he did, they penalized. Ikavin l'torei nafshe b'hai ketzitza. He intended to make himself tor by picking it off or pulling it off. B'hai ketzitza kansua Rabbanan. With that he tried to do, that's where the Rabbanan penalized him. So what ends up happening is that the Rabbanan over here were penalizing him for the thing that he did wrong. In the case of the Bechor, he intended to put a mum in there to make it mutar. So we say, the mum doesn't work. That doesn't work. We penalize you and say you need another mum. By the Tzara'at, we're saying the exact same thing. We're saying that you intended to make yourself tahor through pulling it off. So now we're going to say that that nega is not tahor. The outcome of that, or the result of that, is that you're never going to be able to become tahor. That's a side effect of the penalty. The penalty is you ripped it off to make yourself tahor. We're going to say you're not tahor by ripping it off. But that means you're tameh. And then there's no way to deal with that tumah because there's no alternative. If the nega is not there, then we can't make you tahor. So it's a side effect of the penalty. It's not the intent of the penalty. The penalty is always, whatever you're trying to do, you're unsuccessful at. So when you want to put a mum, you're unsuccessful at making the bechor mutar. By tzara'at, you're unsuccessful at making yourself tahor. But a side effect of that, or a byproduct of that, is when you can't make yourself tahor, you can't ever become tahor. And that's why you are tamei olamit, unless you have parach bikulo, unless it spreads over the whole body, where it would have captured that nega, and then you can make that nega tahor. Or in a case where it was pachuk mikuris, according to Rashi, that means beforehand it was pachuk mikuris, according to the Tosafot, even if it was a grease after you became tamei already, but you pulled off half of it, and the two halves are less than a grease, and therefore if one half got healed, the one on your body, then the other one that you took off is not going to be impactful. So that's the way you can come tor, and that's the explanation of their machloket. So Bayir Apapa, Apapa asks the following question now. Ita hertanan? O vi ita hertanan? When Rabbi Eliezer says, with regards to the nega, when he gets another nega, ita here menu, then you'll become tor. So there are two possible formulations of what's written in that braita. Is it itaher or viyitaher? Rashi says that the difference is whether itaher means that as soon as you get another nega, you are automatically tor from the first nega, or viyitaher means when you get a second nega and become tor from that nega, then the first nega is tor. So the difference between itaher means that something that would happen immediately. As soon as you get a second nega, the first nega is out of the picture, and you're tahor. Either right that you were tahor beforehand. The chamein put the knas in. The knas expires as soon as you get another nega. That's the way to read it if it says itaher. On the other hand, if it says ve'itaher, it means that you got a second nega and became a tahor from that second nega. So only after you become tahor from the second nega is the first nega tahor. The Gemara will say what the nafkamina is in 1 second. The Rabbeinu Gershom reads it slightly differently, which is that both of the cases, you're not tahor until after the second nega becomes tahor. The only question is, itaher, does that work retroactively, the mafreya? When you become tahor from the second nega, it's as if retroactively the first nega you were tahor from all the way in the beginning, from the time that you pulled it off. Or is it v'itaher, means that only after the second nega becomes tahor, are you then tahor from the first nega? Is it prospective, or is it retroactive? That's how he reads the difference, slightly different than Rashi. Rashi is obviously influenced by what's coming up in the Gemara, which is easier to read based on his position. And the where it says, the Mai Nafkamina, what's the difference? In the end, you have to wait for the second nega. Why does it make a difference whether it's after the second nega is Tor or at the time the second nega is Tor? In either case, you have to wait your Tamei until you cure the second nega. So why is there a Nafkamina? The Chatan Shinirai Bo Nega is a Nafkamina for a Chatan that sees a nega. That's none. We have a Mishnah in the Ga'im that tells us Chatan Shinirai Bo Nega. A chatan who just got married and has a nega, we give him 7 days of a waiver for himself, for his cloak and for his clothing, meaning both for tzara'at ha'adam and tzara'at ha'beged, we give him a dispensation. It's based on the fact that a nega is not tamei until a kohen declares it tamei. So here the chatan gets a nega, And that nega, if the kohen declares it tameh, he's going to have to separate from his wife. It's going to undermine all the simcha of his sheva brachot. So we don't want to do that. So we give a suspension of time by which the kohen will not look at the nega. And we give him the time of his zayin yemei mishteh until he's finished with that. Then only then will the kohen look at it and make a determination about it. It's based on a limud from the psukim, which says, v'marei enei ha-kohen. And the Gemara dashes from that, that sometimes the kohen sees it, sometimes the kohen doesn't see it. And these are cases where the kohen won't take a look at it until you pass that time period. So that's true of a chatan in his sheva brachot. And that's true of anybody with regards to the regel. If it's the Pesach, it's Sukkot, it's Shavuot, we won't look at it right by the regel. We'll give you the regel to enjoy and have the simcha, and only afterwards will we look at it. Just as an aside, that shows a parallel between the simcha the regel and the simcha of the sheva brachot. And there's much to say about the idea of the type of simcha and the quality of simcha that is associated with those that create a suspension of the issues of Nigaim, and also have impact with regards to Avelut and other items. They both are influential with regards to those issues, as the Gemara in the beginning of Ketubot speaks about. So now we have here, Iyamart Yitaher Tanan. If you say, according to Rashi, that as soon as you get the second Nega, the first one is Tahor, then Mikamaita Tarle, the Bright Raita, and Atrinale. Then the first one you're now cured from, and now you're Tahor. The second one, you have to wait until after the Sheva Brachot in order to look at it. So the guy actually will be Tahor at this point in time. On the other hand, Iyamart Vitaher Tanan, if you tell me that he's not going to be Tahor until after the second one becomes Tahor, so, Kilo Mitami Lebatraita, even if you wait to look at the second one, Ha Mitamei Vikayi Mikamaita, but then you're still Tamei from the first one, and then there's no suspension because it doesn't matter if you wait to look at the second one, the first one's still a problem until the second one is cured. So therefore you're going to be Tamei. So my, what's the din here? Teiku, it's left, it's unresolved. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom's Girsa, the difference is whether it's Tahor Lemafreya or not. If you say it's going to be Tahor Lemafreya, then we're going to wait to look at the second Nega until after your Sheva Brachot, because then we're going to assume that that second Nega will become Tahor, and Lemafreya, the first one, was Tahor, and then you will classify you as Tahor now. Whereas if you say it's only prospective, then you have to wait for the second Nega to be cured, and then only then is the first nega cured, and so there's no reason to wait, because the first nega is still a problem for you. Obviously, the Rabbeinu Gershom's reading is much harder to say that the mafreya, we assume that you are tahor now, and therefore we're not going to look at the second nega. That's why Rashi's explanation is that simply, as soon as you get the second nega, the first one is tahor. Although for the Rabbeinu Gershom, you could explain that the whole knas here is a knas chachamim, because midoraita you're tahor, and for that reason, the chachamim in this case suspended the tumah for him in that situation, for his zayin yemei mishteh. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom formulates it is, klomar, dechashvinan kamo hashta yidadleu nega. We look at it as if now this is the first time a nega appeared, velo kodem chatunato, and not before that he got married, dino lo kodem chatunato lo yinutim lo. Because if the nega came before he got married, we wouldn't give him the zayin yemei mishteh. So the question is, where do we look at the time period where he got the nega? Do we look at it as if the nega took place before his wedding, and therefore we don't wait to take a look at the new nega? Or do we look at it as if the nega took place after his wedding? Well, that will depend on whether you think the first one is related to the second one. If the first one is only tahor at the time, prospectively, that the second one is tahor, that means that the first time he had a nega was before the chatuna. On the other hand, if you are tahor from the first one retroactively when you become tahor from the second one, then it's as if the first one didn't exist. And since the first one didn't exist, the first time you see a nega is at the day of his chatuna. Again, the problem with the Rabbeinu Gershom is we still haven't reached that point where you're tahor from the second one. So then how do you know that the first one didn't exist, so the mafreya is going to be tahor? You're jumping the gun and making that assumption. That's why Rashi just simply says that yitaher means that as soon as you see a second nega, you're tahor from the first nega. Tosafot also raises a serious issue over here as to what is the status of this individual. I mean, that if you're going to give him the zayin yemei mishteh, that implies that he's tahor right now. How is he tahor right now? Until this point, he was tamei because of the first nega that he cut off. Now suddenly he gets a second nega on his chatuna, and we say, okay, give him zayin yemei mishteh, and he'll be tahor. How does he become tahor? He has to go through the process of tarat ha-mitzorah. And that's what Tosafot says over here. Bim tomar, how about tichlachat mitziporim? He has to shave his whole body. He has to do the procedure that's at the beginning of parashat mitzorah with regards to the birds. And he's not allowed to be together with his wife. during that period of time. It's a case where it was in Mitzora that wasn't Mukhlat. It wasn't determined for certain that he had a Nega. Rather, it was a question mark. And he was locked up for 7 days to see what it would be. And he pulled it off during that period of time. And therefore, he's not subject to all these requirements. You only need those requirements if you were a Mitzora Mukhlat. Inami, Afilu Mukhlat. Even if he was a full-fledged Mitzora, he cuts that Tamemi the Rabbanan. He's Tamemi the Rabbanan. Mikol makom shari lasotig lachat v'tzipurim limot yimei sipuro v'litaher min haTorah. Even though the Rabbanan say that he has residual Tumah, nevertheless, midoraita, he is Tahor when he pulled off the Baharet. So even though you're in violation of Hisham lecha mineged zarat, that you're not allowed to pull off, that's a lav, that you're not allowed to pull off the zarat, once you've done it, you don't have zarat anymore and you can be Tahor. So what he could do is immediately after he pulls it off, he can go through the procedure midoraita to make himself tahor. He's still residually tamei midorabanan. But that means as soon as he gets the second nega, if you say itahir, then he's tahor legamri, because now he's tahor midoraita already, and he just has to now wait for the rabbonon's institution or knas to expire. And that happens as soon as you get the second nega, and then he'll be tahor legamri. So Tosafot tries to figure out what's the scenario in which you can become tahor in a blink of an eye, even though technically a Mitzora needs a whole procedure. And he says that either because it was a Mitzora Muzgar, and you never really fully Tameh, or it was a Mitzora Mukhlat, by where he already carried out all the procedures Midoraita, he's just waiting Midorabanan to be cleared. The truth is, it also says that even if he's just Tameh Midorabanan, he can't bring his Korbanot. So he can do all the other procedures of Tara to bring the Korbanot on the 8th day, or any time after that, he'll have to wait until he's Tor Midorabanan. So that he'll have to do now, once he becomes Tor, when he sees the second Nega. But that'll be the only thing he has to do. Everything else he could have done beforehand in order to make himself tohor and midoraita. Now the Gemara says, "Baimine Rabbi Yirmiya mi Rabbi Zera, tzoreim ozen bebechor umet." A person who puts a mum into the ear of the bechor, our Mishnah, but then he dies. Maldik nos b'don acharav. Do we then penalize the child, his inheritor, afterwards? Rashi says the question is according to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it says we penalize you forever. Is that forever both the lifetime of the person who violated the restriction against putting him a mum in Bechor and his son and those that come after him? Or is it only him, but the one that comes after him is not penalized? The Rambam seems to indicate that it's a question not only according to Rabbi Lezer, but also according to the Chachamim, which is in the Chachamim's position. Do we penalize him and not let him shecht on that mum, both the father who put the mum there, as well as the son who comes afterwards? Imtim Salomar. So now the Gemara is going to bring other examples where we have penalties and then what the outcome of those penalties are with regards to the inheritors of the father, and then try from that to then understand what the halacha would be in our case. The Baal Tosfot will point out that the Gemara does this in three places in Shas, and it changes the order of the Gemara in each of those locations, basically because there's reasons in both directions to say this way or that way, and what the Gemara does is it reorders it based upon the sugya that we're in. Here in the sugya of Bechor, therefore it asks the question about Bechor, and then brings the other examples and says, well, even if you know the answer to those other examples, it won't help you over here until it comes to the final conclusion and all the sugyot that they learned out from the issue with regards to Shvi'id. So now the first place that they say, Imtim Salomar, if you say by Mocher Abdolo Lovdei Kochavim, person who sells off his Eved Kanani to non-Jews, umet, and then he dies. So over there, if he was still alive, we would penalize him and force him to redeem the Eved, even at 10 times his value. Question is, now that he passed away, do we then obligate the son to make that same offer of redeeming the Eved up to 10 times his value? Even if when you sell the Eved to the Ovdei Kochavim, we would consume b'no acharav. They did put a knas on his son. The reason you would do it there is because every day that this Eved Kanani is with an Ovdei Kochavim, he's now out of the world of mitzvot, and he can't perform the mitzvot that he is obligated to do. He's obligated to mitzvot like an isha, because he is partially converted, this Eved Kanani, and that partial conversion now makes him chayav in mitzvot. You sold him to an Ovdei Kochavim, he can't then keep the mitzvot that he is obligated in. And because you caused that problem, and every day that he remains there is a problem for him to be mekayem the mitzvot, therefore we penalize the son and said the son now is responsible for that for which the father did, because we need to save this individual. But that's only because over there, every day, things are worse for this individual. He can't be mekayem the mitzvot. But over here, by the case of Bechor, you don't have that situation. Or Imtim Salomar, Kivein Malachto Memoed. This is a Gemara in the beginning of Moed Katan, which is that one is not allowed to do something that will force him to have to work on Chol HaMoed. There is a dispensation for doing work on Chol HaMoed, which is a Dabar HaAved. If something is going to be lost, irreparable damage done to the individual economically, then we allow you to do such a thing on Chol HaMoed. So for instance, if the crops need to be picked, if you don't pick them, you're going to lose the crops, we would permit such work on Chol HaMoed. But what happens if before the Moed, he could have picked the crops? What he says is, you know what? I'm just going to wait. If I wait, then it's going to be a Dabar Aved when I get to Chol HaMoed, and then I'll have permission to do it on Chol HaMoed. So that's what's called Mekavein Melachto LeMoed. He intentionally pushes off something that will be a Dabar Aved on Chol HaMoed. He could have taken care of it beforehand. He just didn't. But now when it gets to Chol HaMoed, it is a Dabar Aved, so maybe he should have permission to do it. So there the Chachamim penalized him. If he was Kivein Melachto LeMoed, we don't allow him to do that work on Chol HaMoed. He doesn't get the normal dispensation. So now, Kivein Melachto LeMoed Umeid Lokan Zubin Acharav. If you say that when a person does such a thing, we don't penalize his son. So even though the father, who, if he had been around, we wouldn't let him pick the produce, because he could have done it before Pesach, and instead he waited till Chol HaMoed to make it into a Dabar Aved on Chol HaMoed, we say you can't do it. But the son after him can do it. Shom Delo Avida Isusura, because he didn't do an Isur. Over here, there are a number of explanations of what that means. The Rabbeinu Gershom says that he didn't do an Isur Midoraita, he only did an Isur Midorabanan. That's because Melechet Chol HaMoed is only a Din Derabonah, not a Din Doraita. That happens to be a machloket in the Gemara as well as in the Rishonim as to whether Melechet Chol HaMoed is Derabanan or Doraita. But Rabbeinu Gershom is saying the reason over there we don't penalize the son is because it's only a Din Derabonah, not a Din Doraita. Whereas here by Bechor, he's violating a Din Doraita to put a moment at Bechor. Rashi, on the other hand, doesn't focus on the Melechet Chol HaMoed, but the fact that he never did the violation. He had intended to do the Melech on Chol HaMoed, but he died before he could ever do the Isur. And that's what it means, the law of the Isura. He never did any Isur over there. The reason we're letting the son do the Melechet Dabar Aved on Chol HaMoed is because the father, even though we would have penalized him if he was around, he never got around to doing the wrong thing over here. His intent was improper, but he never actually did anything that was a sur in the end. And therefore, we don't penalize the son after him. That's not true by the case of Bechor. He actually carried out what his intention was to put a mum in the Bechor. And that's why over here by Bechor, maybe it's different. So whether you conclude by an Eved Kanani that soul that the son is responsible, or whether if you conclude by the case of Kivei Melachto LeMoed that the son is not responsible, neither of those will be influential with regards to the Bechor, because the cases are different. The case of Bechor, first of all, there is an Isur, according to Rabbeinu Gershom, De'oraita, or according to Rashi, you actually did do the Isur, as well as the fact that this is something that is not a Isur that's recurring over time, it's simply a one-time Isur, as opposed to Eved Kanani, which is a recurring Isur. And as the Balei Tosfot point out, that even if you came to the opposite conclusion, you couldn't learn anything from it as well. So for instance, if by an Eved Kanani, you say the son is not responsible for it, there you could say that's because over there, there's only a violation derabonon. There's no violation d'oraita. Whereas over here by Bechor, there's a violation d'oraita, so you can't prove anything from it. So the Gemara says over here, Hachamai, what's the case by Bechor? V'didei kanzu rabonon v'haleite. Is the knas on the individual himself, and he's not around any longer, and therefore the son is not bound by that penalty by Bechor? Or do the memone kanzu rabonon? Or do the rabonon penalize his possessions v'haite? And his possession is still around, because the Bechor that he put the mum into is here, and that's the possession that was penalized. Amalei tenitua. We have it in a Mishnah in Shvi'it. Sadeh shenit kavtza b'shvi'it. If you have a field that has the thorns taken out of it on Shvi'it, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, you literally pick the thorns out of the field, and even though you did that, it's still not considered to be a melacha d'oraita that is a surat Shvi'it. According to Rashi, and backed by the Balei Tosafot as well, the case here is not a case where you're picking the weeds out of the ground. That would be an Isur d'oraita, and that would be problematic. But rather, you're dealing with a case where he's picking up the thorns that are just laying on the field. There's stuff that's strewn over the field, and you're just clearing the stuff off that's on the field, which is not Asur midoraita, which is only Asur midorabanan. So that Isur, or that thing that you did on Shvi'it, you're allowed to then plant the field on Motzei Shvi'it. Nitaiva nidaira lo tizra l'demotzei shvi'it. On the other hand, if you nitaiva, Rashi says, fertilize the field, o nidaira, you actually brought animals and corralled them on the field so that they stay there for a period of time and they leave their refuse on the ground, which is basically fertilizing the ground, then lo tizra motzei shvi'it. Then you can't plant it on motzei shvi'it. Now, whether the difference is because nitkavtza is only an Isur derabanan, whereas nitaiva nidaira are Isurim de Oraita, and that's the difference between them, and therefore we only penalize you when you did an Issur d'oraita that you can't then plant the Motzei Shviit and benefit from that which you did, and not by an Issur d'Rabbanan, or whether they're both Issurei d'Rabbanan, and the real problem is, as Rashi says here, Avad b'Shviit avodah chashuva. You didn't do anything significant on Shviit when you cleared up the field from the thorns. On the other hand, when you did Niteva Nidaira, over there, you did something that was Avad avodah chashuva b'Shviit. You did something that was significant, or something that was important on Shviit. So according to Rashi and Tosafot, Nit Kabza is only an Iser d'Rabbanan because you're clearing the field of the thorns, not that are in the ground, but are already talush on the ground. And that is maybe an Iser d'Rabbanan, but it's not a avoda chashuva on Shviit. And for that reason, we don't penalize you not to plant next year. And if you need Teva, you need Daira, either you violated an Iser d'Oraita, and that's why we penalize you, or even if you say that it's an Iser d'Rabbanan, it's still considered to be an avodah chashuva. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom says that Nit Kabza is also a case where you picked it out of the ground. You weeded the ground, and nevertheless, you're not restricted from doing a Motzei Shviit, because he says the Kavatz lo chashiva melocha. That's not called melocha on the ground, or doing work on the ground when you pull the weeds out. Tosafot argues on that and says that when you pull weeds out of the ground, that's the equivalent of harisha or zriah, like the Gemara in Shabbat says with regards to melachat Shabbat. And therefore, it would be considered a real malacha midoraita. Nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Gershom says that's not considered malacha. On the other hand, nitaiva v'nidaira is considered malacha. The Bali Tosafot bring from the Yushalmi that tiyuv is a second plowing of the field, which is that nit kavtza is the first plowing of the field, and nitaiva is a second plowing of the field. The first plowing of the field is where he plows in order to clear all the weeds and everything off the field. The second plowing is to prepare it for planting. And that's the difference. The plowing that you do to clear it of the weeds, not everybody does that. And therefore, it's not considered to be significant enough of preparation where we're going to say you can't plant the Motzei Shviit, even though it's wrong. Or the second plowing, which is the plowing that everybody does to prepare the field for planting, that plowing, if you do it on Shviit, we're not going to let you plant on Motzei Shviit. So no matter how you explain it, there is a point where there is a penalty for doing work on Shviit that you can't benefit from on Motzei Shviit. Amar Rav Yosi Bar Chanina Naktinan, we have from that, Heitiva Umeit, if he did the Hatava and then died, Beno Zora, the child is allowed to plant it. Alma, the Dei Kansu Rabbanan, the Brei Lo Kansu Rabbanan. You see that case in Shviit, that they penalized the father, the one who did the Isur, and they didn't penalize his possessions, and therefore the son is not subject to that penalty. And therefore the same is true over here by the case of Bechor. In the case of Bechor, we're going to penalize the individual who put the mom in there. We're not going to penalize the son who comes after him. And therefore, the son who comes after him, according to Rashi, Rabbi Eliezer would say there's no penalty on me. You have to wait for another mom. According to the Rambam, this is even the Shita of the Rabbanan, that you could shecht on that mom if your father passed away who did the Isur, then the son has the ability to benefit from it because the penalty is on the one who did the Isur, not on the possession itself. The Bali Tosafot just point out that according to their explanation, which is the same explanation as Rashi, we're talking about an issue mid the Rabbanan. And if it's an issue mid the Rabbanan, how can you prove from Shviit, which is an issue de Rabbanan, to Bechor, which is an issue de Oraita? So the Bali Tosafot in the end say, the Ishlamar Kasavish Royal Achmir Bishviit Yoter Mikulam, that the Rabbanan in general were very machmir with regards to Shviit, because people did not take Shviit seriously, or because of what we see in Parshat Bahar, that Avkasho Shviit, violating the Shviit, has serious repercussions. Like Rashi brings in Parshat Bahar, based on the Midrash, that the order of the Pashiot there is the downfall of an individual who first started transacting in Perot Shviit and not being careful about Shviit, so then he loses all his possessions, and then he has to sell himself. All of that happens because of the problem of Shviit. For that reason, the Chachamim took Shviit very seriously, and they gave it a status like a Din D'Oraita, and therefore you could learn from Shviit to Bechor. Because had it been that there was a penalty on his son D'Oraita, then the Chachamim by Shviit would have done the same thing. Amar Abaye Naktinan, we concluded, Timei Tarot Umeit. Person who made someone else's Tarot, Tamei, and dies, Lo Kansu Bnu Acharav. We don't penalize the son afterwards. My Daima. Hezek Sheno Nikar, Lo Shmei Hezek. In general, Hezek that is not visible is not considered to be Hezek, and you're not responsible for it. When a person makes the possessions of his friend, his Tarot of his friend, Tamei, they are the same possession. You look at the food, you look at the item, it's the same item before and afterwards. It's a metaphysical problem that it's now Tamei instead of being Tahor. Midoraita, there's no compensation for that because it's Hezek, Shenu, Nikar. Nevertheless, Katzah Rabbanan, the Rabbanan imposed a Knas by where Hezek, Shenu, Nikar, you have to pay for it. The reason the Chachamim instituted such a knas is so people don't go around ruining other people's property through hezek sheino nikar and then saying, I'm not responsible for it. So then they made you responsible for it to prevent people from acting in such a deleterious manner. Lady de kansu rabbanon, when it comes to that knas, they imposed it on the individual himself. The brei lo kansu rabbanon, the son, they did not penalize. Or in essence, it would be in essence a derabbanon le derabbanon. The whole fact that you have to pay for hezek sheino nikar is already a knas derabbanon. If we then said that the son would have to pay for it also, that would be a knas le knas. Meaning that the person who was obligated to pay was the father. Now we're going to say that the son has to step into the shoes of the father and pay as well. That's also a knas midrabanan, that they would penalize the son as well as the father. So in essence, it looks like almost like two dine derabanan, which we don't usually do. Or you could say that the original knas was instituted in that way. The original knas was only instituted on the individual, not on the son. Had we instituted it up front as a knas on all the parties or on the possessions of the individual, then in Okanami, the son would be responsible. But in the end, the knas is only on the individual, not on the possession, which is similar to what we're saying over here, that the penalties that the Chachamim instituted in these instances were on the individual and not on the possession of the individual. And then that frees the son of the obligations with regards to that knas. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Hei, Amud Aleph.